We're in the Bel Air home of, believe it or not, Mr. Magoo, Jim Backus, in Southern California. We're delighted to be here with you.
Thank you, Chuck. I'm glad you found it. Of course, this is Mr. Magoo's house. He paid for it, but I stay here as an elder boarder. I've been with him for 33 years now. You know, I'm surprised that you and your lovely wife got here. You came from the Beverly Hills Hotel out Sunset. You followed my instructions. Mm-hmm. This is a little hideaway, you know.
It is, really.
Gap in the bushes kind of jumps over.
That's right.
But you know, it's a funny thing. In Hollywood, this is never my house until I no longer live here. This is the old Robert Montgomery house.
Oh, it is.
That's the thing they do in Hollywood. You say, where do you live? Well, we live in the old Robert Taylor Barber Stanwyck house. So I think this was the old Robert Montgomery. Before that was the Herbert Marshall.
He
built it.
Magoo was in good company.
Yeah, he was a lovely man. I did the. Oh, a couple pictures with Bart, as we call him. You know, he was severely wounded in World War I and had a wooden leg, which he mm-hmm. was very brave. He was in pain most of the time. He was a lovely man.
You are, too, I must say.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
You're
very
charming, and it's so much of a pleasure to be here. And as long as we start off with Mr. Magoo, you said you've been doing Magoo, or you've known Magoo for
32 years. We had the anniversary, I think, in 1950. We started in 1951 or 52, I'm not sure. And we've been on the air now, or on screen, rather, or whatever. How many years is that? It's about 36 years.
Yeah, a long time.
And Magoo started out, we made the first one, and it wasn't Mr. Magoo, it was the nephew, Waldo. You know Waldo?
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
So they're looking. It was a story of a boy on his vacation who was going to visit his uncle and kept falling out of the car, and a bear would get in. And of course, the uncle liked the bear better than the kid with the fur coat. It was a mistaken identity, but they didn't know who to get the uncle. They had everything cast except that and Jerry Hausner and John Hubley, may rest in peace. Suddenly, I remembered I did a character. On a lot of radio shows, a big pompous blowhard type of fella, and they said, I wonder if that would fit in, and I went out and tried it, and we made the first one practically in a garage on very little money,
mm-hmm.
and it took off just like overnight. It became a big instantaneous hit, and in 1956 and 57 we won the Academy Awards back to back. We don't have the Oscars. They went with another fella. When Edward R. Murrow came to visit on Person to Person, they were standing there. So Magoo has been a kind of a mixed blessing, because a lot of times it's kept me out of good parts.
Because people felt that you were too.
That I was a blundering, nearsighted old guy. And of course, we also, when we starred Magoo, we are making fun of someone's handicap.
Mm-hmm.
Because mm-hmm. he cannot see very well. And we thought we might run into problems there, but I think in the 35 or 36 years we've been going, I don't think we've gotten more than one or two letters that ever commented that we were making fun. And I think the reason for that is Magoo sees better than you and I. Mm-hmm. He sees exactly what he wants to see. And his eyesight is very, very sharp.
Now, have you made any Magoo cartoons recently?
I made so many of them. Quite frankly, they all kind of blend into mm-hmm. one. But mm-hmm. they have enough in the library to keep them going, forever.
Well,
because
really
as soon
will.
As they run out of playing the 10,000 we have, there's another generation mm-hmm. comes along. Mm-hmm. And so it's brand new to them. The same as Gilligan's Island. We only made about 100 Gilligan's Island. I think I don't know how many they've played in reruns. Mm-hmm. I've lost count. I know I sit here and get furious because I don't get any money anymore.
Yeah, the residuals have run out.
Yeah, they've run out, and I sit and people call me and say, hey, we saw you three times on Saturday. And I said, yeah, it didn't make a quarter.
And that show was only on for about three seasons, wasn't it?
Yeah. And they took it off mm-hmm. when it was in the top 10.
Why did
it? Big mistake. I'm going to have a little iced tea, so salute.
Okay. I'm wondering why they finally, or why they took it off after such a short period of time.
It was one of those things that, like you, network shenanigans. It was behind the scenes finagling. What happened is they canceled Gunsmoke,
mm-hmm.
and when Paley's wife, I think, heard that they'd canceled Gunsmoke, that was like spitting on the American flag. And Paley said, "I want that show back." I want to put back on the schedule. Well, something had to give. Well, it was a case of Lucille Ball or us, and it was inner politics of the real Madison Avenue kind at its best. Because I had dinner with Perry Lafferty, who was then vice president in charge of programming at CBS, and Mike Dan. Mm-hmm. And they assured me that the show was on the schedule for the next year. And I was having lunch the next day, and I got a long-distance call, and they said, "We've been canceled." And I said, "You can't be canceled. I have a renewal right here with me." And so it was canceled. So go through City Hall.
Oh, gee. So, but it still is on. It's still playing, and the public is still enjoying it.
I know it. I go figure it out. It gets better with time. And the kids enjoy it more because they know. I've had a kid sit here and tell you what's coming next. I couldn't begin to tell. So then Gilligan falls down, and Mr. Howell picks him up. And they laugh more. It gets better because certain things about comedy do bear repetition. Like in my generation, we used to fall down every time Fibber McGee went for the closet.
Right.
You knew what was going to happen. Or Jack Benny got to start the automobile, and Mel Blanc went into his song and dance. And you knew it was coming, and you anticipated. You relished it.
And that's the way this works. Well, even though the checks have stopped coming in on Gilligan's Island for you, at least you can enjoy the fact that you are reaching yet another generation with that.
It's a very
show.
Gratifying feeling to receive mail, particularly when I was sick. I got the most lovely letters from people. They didn't want anything. They just wanted to wish me well and a speedy recovery.
Well, we wish you that too, and you're looking very fit.
Well, thank you. I'm a little shaky from time to time, but I'm much better. I was pretty sick for a while.
Mm-hmm. But you look fine.
So I shouldn't. That was about 5 years ago, and I more or less was under house arrest. Mm-hmm. Though I did get out and made that picture, slapstick of the other kind, I think as they call it now. It's the Kurt Vonnegut picture with Jerry Lewis and Madeline Kahn and myself and the late Marty Feldman. It was a very, very good picture. Funny thing, I was sitting here in this room about 2 years ago, and Olga, the lady that showed you in, she came to the door of the den and said, "There's a young man wants to talk to you." So I had no idea who it was, and I said, "Well, bring him in. We'll give him some hot tea, coffee, cocoa, whatever." And then came this kid. To me, he was a kid. And he introduced himself, and he said, "I'm Stephen Paul." I said, "Well, that's nice. I'm glad to see you." And he said, "I want you in my next picture." Well, I thought I had a mental case. So I said, "Your next picture?" He says, "Yes, it's called Slapstick." I said, "Slapstick?" He said, "Yeah, Kurt Vonnegut wrote it." I said, "And that's your picture?" He said, "Yes, I bought it from Kurt, and we're working on it together." I thought, "Oh, boy, better call the Bel Air Patrol and get the the rubber room ready, you know." So he said, "I got Jerry Lewis." And I said, "Jerry Lewis is doing what?" He plays the kid, and Madeline Kahn plays the other kid. He says, "That's right." And he said, "I got Michelle Legrand to do the music." And, well, I thought, by now, he's crazy. So he said, "And I want you to be the president." I said, "Well, you know, I thought I'll, you know, play along with the kid." I said, "All right, I'm the president." So he said, then I realized he wasn't kidding. Because he showed me some of the rough draft of the script. And so I had to cross the room for some reason. I said to him, I said, "You know, I don't walk so too well." And he said, you don't walk too well, Mr. Backus." I said, "No, there was another president that didn't walk too well either." And he said, "Who, Millard Fillmore?" I said, then I realized from where he stood, 23 years, Roosevelt was a long way off.
Yeah.
So I'm kidding a little about that, but Steve loves to hear this story anyhow. And he turned out to be a delightful picture. And for 23 years old, he's now 25.
Mm-hmm.
I've had hangovers longer than that. And it's nice to see someone like that come along. It's refreshing. I've made over, I think, close to 250 pictures.
You really had quite a career on the screen, haven't you?
Yeah, most people don't remember that.
Well, you were always in a supporting role. You never,
the
or seldom,
friend.
Were in the... that's right, yeah. And And you're there, you make an impact, but they always remember Robert Taylor, you know.
Yeah, that's right. I always used to wear the same suit. So it wouldn't clash with the leading man. I used to know they would pick this suit because at the start of every picture, the producer would say to the wardrobe man, "Now I want to see all the wardrobe that these fellows are going to wear in this picture." So Robert Taylor would come in with a pinstripe and produce like that. Now my pinstripe, that cancels that. So he was wearing a light blue suit. I got that cancels that. So I had a mouse-colored gray suit. I think for 15 years straight, I wore it in every picture. The producers, that's it. That's it. That's marvelous. And, yeah, the hero's best friend, that was me. I was the guy that got splashed when Esther Williams jumped in the pool. We used to have a good best friend club for a while. Let's see, was it? Keenan Wynn was, it was for a long time, either he had the part or I got the part. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of our friends from radio used to work in pictures with me. Remember Frank Lovejoy?
Sure,
of course. He was a big man in radio. And Everett Sloan was a good friend of mine. Barry Sullivan. We all worked in radio. We used to do 3 and 4 series a day in New York.
Well, radio is, as you mentioned somewhat a little bit earlier, is the place where you developed the voice
of Magoo.
That happened to be Magoo, and Magoo, then also really somewhat of Thurston
Hubert
Howell.
Updike, yeah.
Hubert Updike.
Hubert Updike became Thurston Howell because it's the same guy that wrote it. Well, we had many writers, but the Sherwood Schwartz was on the Alan Young show where I developed Hubert Updike. And without dating myself, the first time I did Hubert Updike, that's a fellow with the broad A's that has the Cadillac with two chauffeurs, one for right-hand turns and one for left-hand turns. And I did it, and he was a clenched jaw guy, and it was a hit overnight, but the censors, or the what do they call them in... They got a title, like vice president in charge of ethics and practices. And they said, "You can't do that character." I said, "Why not?" They said, "It sounds like Franklin Roosevelt." Well, I said, "That's the same background I want this guy to come from." Mm-hmm. But it did have the broad A. If you remember, he used to talk quite like that. So I went ahead and did it, and I put it in the mothballs, and then when Sherwood Schwartz, about 20 years later, started out with the Gilligans, he had just Rich Man. That's all he had. Mm-hmm. He called me up. He said, "Would you like to play the Rich Man?" I said, "Hubert?" He said, "Well, Hubert's father." I said, "Okay." So the first script we shot in Hawaii, I took Sherwood on his word. He said, "You know, I didn't realize they're going to get you." And he said, "I just wrote a kind of a rich guy with a couple of lines." He said, "But I promise you when we get to Hawaii, we'll rewrite it." When he gave me the script, the wine list was longer on the plane. But he made up for it, so that nothing gained, nothing lost. And that's what it was. It was, and actually, Magoo, we used to have to do what was called a double in those days. You played your straight voice, and then if you wanted to get hired, for them to save money, you'd do another voice. Mm-hmm. As far away from your own voice as you possibly could. Well, I developed a voice. He was a sheriff. He was a farmer. But it was essentially Magoo. And that's where I developed him. I did about 5 years on Edgar Bergen's show. I played a pompous guy that he had run into. And radio was great training. That I don't know where the kids today are going to get anything equal it. Because I came too late for stock companies in vaudeville, so radio was our break-in. Mm-hmm. And practically all the good actors out here now of my age, cut their teeth in radio because you'd have to do dialects, ages, you know, and you had to create a picture with just your voice. And you didn't have... In a lot of ways, radio was a lot funnier. You could be funnier on radio than you could on television. Jack Benny never was as funny on television as he was on radio.
Well, because you counted on the element of the listener's imagination.
If we had time, I got a tape upstairs. I'm the real hand. My wife here, she'd kill me. Henny, you've seen her, haven't you?
Sure, yeah.
Well, she's going to be on the tour. We're going to be in Chicago. You know?
Good.
But I got a tape. I'll bring it to Chicago. Is that a
deal?
Okay,
fine.
It's considered the funniest scene Benny ever did on radio. And he's buying a used car. and I play the dealer, and he drives up in the Maxwell. It is hilarious, and the timing, and because you imagine what you're seeing. Everyone has a different picture, but we could go much wilder than you can in television.
You did a lot with Jack Benny on his show over the years, didn't you?
Yes,
one of those special kind of characters who comes in and does a 2.5 pages and then moves on, but always is there to add to the whole Benny mystique.
Yeah.
Now you supported Danny Kaye on his show for a little while.
Yeah, I played the sponsor, and then I worked with George and Gracie.
Mm-hmm.
They were next door to us in television on I Marry Joan. Mm-hmm. And now we go ahead. We're leapfrogging all over the place.
Well, that's okay.
And I Marry Joan was a very successful, talk about successful series, but I Marry Joan never got the credit it should. Excuse me while I take another slug of this tea, and it is tea.
Okay. Actually, I Marry Joan preceded Gilligan's Island by
a few years. Yeah. I Marry Joan was right after I Love Lucy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we shot I Marry Joan down in General Service Studios.
Mm-hmm.
And right next door was Burns and Allen shooting their show.
Mm-hmm.
I Love Lucy, their show. Ann Southern, Ozzie and Harriet.
Oh, boy.
A few more. Life with Father. We were all in this little studio. And most of the stars were women. Eve Arden.
Mm-hmm. Armis Brooks.
So instead of a wall, we had a girdle around this. And we watched it was like a big, play yard.
Did there was something about the I Married Joan series that, aside, of course, from the comedy, and you were a Joan's husband, Judge Bradley Stevens.
Yeah. You've done your work.
I know. And, well, they're still on the air,
That comes up in trivia.
Mm-hmm.
Have you played trivia?
The new game.
Yeah.
Haven't gotten a hold of it yet.
We got a guy that works part-time for us. It is absolutely marvelous. Uh-huh. He won $37,000 on the pyramid.
Oh, my gosh.
And now you can't talk to him. Thank God he's still working for us. He got a car. He's in Japan now. But he knew everything. We had a disc jockey that used to call me from Boston, who was a trivia nut. And I used to, we rigged it up. I'd go upstairs with questions, and he would take the phone down there, and the guy in Boston, and I used to shoot the questions at him. But one of the questions that come up in most trivia is, what you just said, the occupation of Joan Davis's husband and I Marry Joan. His name was Bradley J. Stevens, right?
Right.
And he was a judge. And that was what made it so funny, is that she made an idiot out of the judge.
Correct.
And that's the reason, when I went over to England for the first time, right after I Married Joan, I hadn't been there. I got off the ship. I wasn't prepared for the excitement that it caused with Magoo and I Married Joan. Now, television was just starting in Great Britain. And I Married Joan was on at 8 o'clock on Sunday night. It had no opposition. The whole island just stopped for a half an hour. And I walked up Piccadilly Circus. The people threw things out of the window. And I went to lunch at the Garrick Club, and I had lunch, having lunch at the same, the Garrick Club is an actors' club in London. It was Sir Laurence Olivier, Sir Michael Redgrave, Sir John Mills, Sir John Gielgud, all the aristocracy of the British theater. They came out of the club the same time as I did, and we were waiting for cabs, and a school let out across the street. And the kids mobbed me, ignored them, and said, "Hey, that's John Gielgud." And the reason that I talked to a program guy over in England, and he told me, I said, "Why? What is the popularity of I Marry Joan?" He said, "Well, don't you understand? In England, it's a double joke. Because in England, a woman, you'll pardon if I tell you, speaks only when spoken to, walks four paces behind, and to see a woman, and the British also revere a judge much more than we do. Mm-hmm. To them, a judge is a big guy, he wears that wig, and he's a powerful figure. You don't fool around with him. So to have a judge on one end and a woman, a mere woman, making an idiot out of a judge, just tickled them absolutely out of their mind." And another thing, Magoo is just, the English people go, they have Magoo festivals in theaters.
Mm-hmm.
Someone sent me a marquee. Said Mr. Magoo, also Moby Dick, or Gone with the Wind.
The feature was the cartoon.
Yeah,
Magoo,
Mr. Magoo. Built over the feature, whatever.
And in addition, we show Gone with the Wind.
Yeah. And Princess Margaret used to have Magoo's run off at the palace. And when I got there, the one of the British papers on the front page had Princess Margaret's boyfriend arrives or something in England. It was Mr. Magoo.
on the I Married Joan series, there was no live music behind the opening and closing credits, and it was a group singing.
Boy, you know everything.
And I want to know why that was.
Well, they had a strike.
Uh-huh.
ASCAP, I think, mm-hmm. or the musicians of some kind. So they bootlegged it down in Mexico. No, they could use voices, but they couldn't use instruments.
Couldn't use the instruments, uh-huh.
So those boom, 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 mm-hmm. boom, boom. They used musical bridges. That was a quartet going. You know, instead of the...
I Mary Joan.
What a girl, what a girl, what a guy. I Mary Joan. Do you know the rest?
Well, you lost me two bars back. But that's the way it was. And then they would even the little musical bridges between the scenes.
That's right. They used to set the scenes and the theme and everything.
It made for a very distinctive series.
Boom, 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 boom. You know Gilligan's Island? Once there was a sailor man. Do you know that one?
Well, I can't sing it like you can, but it's part of my life, that theme song.
Most kids can hum it. I never learned it.
Well, once again, the kids sit and watch it, and kids never mind repeats.
All right,
you're
a trivia. What was Magoo's first name, Mr. Magoo's first name?
Oh, you got me.
Quincy.
And
on Hollywood Squares one time, they had a question, what is the second most identifiable voice in the world? Well, the person who was guessing naturally assumed, because I was on the panel, Mr. Magoo, which was correct. That was correct. Mm-hmm. But, of course, what everyone wants to know, who's the first one?
And?
Who do you think it is?
The most identifiable voice in the world?
In the world. Next, the most identifiable. Magoo is the second most identifiable.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
They just know...
Winston Churchill, maybe?
No. It's a trick. Oh. It is the recorded guy on tape who calls the faithful to prayer in all the Muslim countries.
Oh.
See, he used to come out on a tower, remember? Mm-hmm. But that's all done on tape. And they got one priest to do it.
Oh.
And in India alone, he's got a 97 share.
Okay. Well, your comedy ability is very keen yet. We're talking to Jim Backus, and we have lots more to talk about, a great career, and a new book that's coming out very soon, which is the reason why Jim is coming to Chicago a little later this year, and we'll talk about that in just a moment. We're talking with Jim Backus. Now, Jim, tell us about the new book that you have.
Well... That's a long story, but here goes. The book is called Backus Strikes Back. Originally it was called Shake, Rattle, and Roll, which is a title I like, but the objection was that they might think it's a Chubby Checkers or to do with music. And what it was about 5 years ago, I was stricken with an undiagnosable, is there such a word?
It's good enough.
Disease, a neurological disorder, which they had many... names for, none of which were accurate, but they all were devastating. And it was what was called a catastrophic disease, and still is, because it's one of those things you live with, you don't live, you don't die from. And so I was grounded. I was unable to walk. I couldn't use my arms very well, and I had trouble talking. In other words, I was a mess.
Mm-hmm.
So... Rather, I read Anatomy of an Illness. What the heck is his
Norman
name?
Cousins.
You're right. Norman Cousins' book. And he's right over here at UCLA, right across the street from us. And I was very impressed, and I talked to him. I talked to him on the phone. And so I decided to write the story of a disease from a humorous angle, not making fun of it, but the way it happened, and it turned out funny, because it is funny. Everything's funny. Mm-hmm. Not ha ha he look at him, you know, but it was sad, and it was a labor of love, and I finished it. Henny wrote it with me. She was I would write kind of loosely, and she's a very good technician. She put it together. And we had written two comedy books back in 57, 62. We wrote Rocks on the Roof, which was a story of two New York kids moving out here to Lotus Land. You know, we never figured on taking out the garbage or barbecue pits or any of that. I left Cleveland to get away from that. So here we are back again. And that was a fairly successful book. It was launched on This Is Your Life, mm-hmm. which is an automatic 50,000 sale in those days. Ralph Edwards in the bookstore, I was signing autographs. Here, sign this. Well, you couldn't dream up better publicity than that.
Oh, boy, yeah.
And then we wrote another book, which a story of our delayed honeymoon in Europe, called What Are You Doing After the Orgy? These books were both fairly successful. So that was our... Then, of course, got in radio. We used to write so much without ever thinking that we were writing. You know, we wrote lead-ins and gags. So we had written a novel that was in the hands of an English agent, so we just sent him the rough cut of this, and he said, "This is great. This is sensational. We'll finish it up." We had a few suggestions, and we went back to work, and it really saved my life. The labor of doing it, and we finished it, and it was sold overnight. To Stein and Day, one of the better publishing houses. And I have a letter from Saul Stein that's just beautiful.
Well, and now the book is going to be coming out in May.
Yeah, then we hit the chicken a la king circuit.
So you'll be hopscotching all over the country for that sort of thing.
We open in New York. We have to meet the publisher. We have never met these people. We talk to them every day on the phone. You know, their cuts, cut this, because they're composing the galleys. We got 20 pages of pictures. And it's published in May. So we'll be going back June 8th. We open on the Today Show.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. Then we do the New York bit for 3 days. And that's press interviews. It's quite... I'm taking a physiotherapist with me. And to keep me in shape.
Now, does the physiotherapist, does he work with you every day?
Every day.
7 days?
Every day, seven days a week. Occasionally we go, but...
How much time do you work with him?
An hour and a half. I ran 2 miles this afternoon.
You ran? In place, in your house? You out here?
No, around the park.
Oh.
The whole park where Arm and Hammer... endowed it. It's a little miniature golf course with a jogging track, and everybody you meet everyone you ever knew there. I do 2 miles. I do sit-ups. I do push-ups, which I couldn't have done 6 years ago. It still knocks me out, but it keeps me loose, and it's the only way I can operate.
Well, that it's wonderful.
Yeah,
I mean, from really being almost on the edge to this, you look marvelous. And aside from walking a little slow, and I think you're just favoring yourself a little bit on that, I think that it's wonderful. And that's what all that's about.
So that's all down in the book. And various doctors and psychiatrists and you name it, we've got it all. But and it's flashbacks, because I had a lot of time to think. And it altered my life completely. I enjoy things more.
Well, you got a new lease on life.
That's right.
For this whole thing. Are you able or thinking of doing some more things on television?
Well, I can get it all together for a couple of hours. I did a picture called Prince Jack, which I'm very proud of. A good friend of mine, gosh, Mr. Levitt, I call him. He wrote and produced and directed and got it together. I think the finite, F-I-N-I-T-E, of the Kennedy assassination. This says it all and wraps it all up, mm-hmm. I hope, because this is supposedly what happened. I don't know. And it's an expose, but there's only 10 of us in the cast. Dana Andrews played Cardinal McIntyre. Robert Guillaume, you know the fellow
yes.
in Benson? He does Martin Luther King. He's marvelous. Kenny Mars, a very underrated character actor mm-hmm. and comedian. You know who Kenny
sure.
Mars is? Funny.
Big
funny
ball,
guy.
Yeah.
He does Lyndon Johnson. Mm-hmm. You can't believe it. He and I play a dirty, nasty, sniveling Texas publisher with a real down, you know, Texan dialect.
Mm-hmm.
And Lyndon and I, McKinney and I, have a fight. He is Lyndon and me is this dirty, nasty publisher. It is hilarious. Of course, you can only, it's all the four-letter words in the mm-hmm. world, because that's the way those guys talk. You
yes,
can't
uh-huh.
say, golly, darn you, you know. And Cameron Mitchell plays the General Walker, the fascist general. Bob Hogan plays Kennedy. He's marvelous. And Lloyd Nolan, I plays Joe Kennedy, the old man. And that's all there is, mm-hmm. except an unknown blonde in bed with JFK.
No.
All you see is her head. Mm-hmm. We wanted Henny to play it.
Is there a release date scheduled for this yet?
I saw an advance. No, I don't think it's been set yet. They're getting a distributor, though. And it's a very good picture. I did that, and I didn't know. Levitt was a wonderful guy. He came out here and he talked to me. He said, "Do you think you can do it?" I said, "Yeah, I think I can." He said, "We'll make it as easy as we can for you." And I put in a day, 9 in the morning till 12 at night. He kept saying, "Can you do one more shot?" I did it. Don't ask me how.
Well, that's part of. Part of the determination when you've got something to do, you go ahead and do it. I think it's a very important thing. If you sit around and feel sorry for yourself, anybody, healthy
yeah.
or no, then you're going to be in the
when
in
are
the
you on
doldrums
Chicago?
All the time. Every Saturday afternoon,
live
from 1 o'clock until 5 o'clock.
He's very good, isn't he?
Oh, thank you. I want to ask you about a role you played on a television series, a short-run TV series called Blondie. Now, you played J.C. Dithers on that
Dithers,
show, didn't
yeah.
you?
Henny played Mrs. Dithers.
You and your wife was
yeah,
on that?
Yeah, and Will Hutchins played
Dagwood,
and Patricia Hardy played Blondie. She was wonderful. And the two kids, I forget their names. They were, that lasted 13 weeks.
Just a quickie.
It was a quickie. I don't know why it didn't. I thought it was kind of funny. Did you ever see it?
I don't think I did. It was only.
I don't think anyone had you blinked.
There was an earlier Blondie TV series.
Oh.
I think with Penny Singleton.
No, that was in pictures.
Well,
no.
I know she did the movies, but I think
that was on radio.
Well,
do you think she did it on television?
I think there was a
yeah,
short.
You might have. Yeah, back in the Stone
Penny.
Age. Yeah. Somewhere in this room, Perry Lafferty, who is one of my, if there's such a thing, is one of my best friends. He and his wife are married the same day that we were.
Oh,
yeah.
Uh-huh.
And we go back quite a few years. Perry was vice president of CBS. He put on Gilligan's. He also put on Blondie. And it was not his idea, I must say. It was someone way up there somewhere. And he's, you know the way MacArthur, you get the pen that MacArthur signed mm-hmm. a treaty with, which is mounted on a memento. He mounted a pen on a piece of mahogany with a beautiful brass plate and said, "This is the pen that canceled Blondie." Sort of an inside joke.
Yeah, I would say. Well, some of them,
they
I
were
guess
kind
you
of funny.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of Penny Singleton, she had a radio show after the Blondie series. On which you portrayed a real estate agent.
Where do you come up with all this?
Well, I have vase.
You have vase? I have relatives living in Bel Air.
Yeah.
I'll tell you who's a wonderful guy is George Burns. Uh-huh. He comes over here. He used to come over about once a week. Sat in that chair over there. Amazing man. 89 years old. Just got back from the world cruise on the Queen Elizabeth. The vitality of the man. The energy. And everything is positive.
Mm-hmm.
I said, George, you like the Henny was talking to him too. Do you like the QE too? He says, love it, love it, love it. When he said it's final, you know, he says, yeah, it's a great ship, great ship. And now most people wax nostalgic about the Queen Elizabeth,
the original
yeah. one. He says, no, couldn't hold a candle to this. When you go to dinner at his house, you meet the damnedest people like Roger Miller.
No, well, old. he toured with Roger Miller.
Yeah, well, but yeah. There's always somebody like somebody that. You expect, you know, to see the old guard from Hillcrest over there, you know, and they're kids. Back Porch Majority or whatever they, you know, always like a surprise. And it's a funny thing. And George doesn't have any of his mementos like this. I love the pictures around the wall.
This room is very
warm. But
he doesn't.
Yeah, he doesn't. I don't know where his Oscar is that he won for Sunshine Boys. There's no mementos of the past. It's all out here, which is a very healthy thing.
Well, he's
funniest
right.
man in the world.
One
most
last,
of it I can't tell you.
One last question, and maybe a memory for you. There was a series on radio on which you were a part of it, and you and a lot of the great supporting character actors from radio were also on this show. It was called The Mel Blanc Show.
Oh, yes.
Hans Conried was on there. And
Ugga-bugga-boo-bugga-boo-boo.
That's right.
Did you talk to Mel?
Oh, yes, some time ago we talked with Mel.
Yeah, I break him up whenever I see him because we're the only two people alive that no one else sees. And poor Hans, he's gone.
Yeah, well, Joe Kearns was on that.
Joe Kearns. And Jerry Hausner.
Mary Jane Croft and so many people. Yeah. It was really a bringing together of a lot of great comedians.
You know, Jerry Hausner did all the babies on radio.
That's what I understand.
He painted that picture. He played Waldo. Yeah, that's.
There's a wonderful picture of Mr. Magoo over the on the mantle.
Overlooking the room.
Overlooking the house that he built.
Yeah.
Jim Backus, I'm so happy to have been able to spend a little time with you.
Well, I'm so happy you came. I think we started out a little slow, didn't we?
No, we started off quickly, I think.
But this was a very lovely way to spend the. I got a little sentimental, started to well up a little, but. God bless.
Well, I wish you a lot of luck and good health and much happiness in the future. Right, we'll see you in June.
Okay.
Thank you.